Hey, everybody. We are at Internet Friends, episode 25. I'm Jared Conn with Tom. There he is.
Hello, everybody.
Ivan is going to be a little bit late, but he is going to appear. He's just waiting for his pal to arrive, who's going to make a breakfast. Maybe as late as like half.
I am only hearing of one third of your words.
One third of my words.
Obviously, the most wise and insightful ones, you know.
Yes.
Mm.
Okay. Well, let's start off with you. I will talk very slowly. Maybe it'll catch everything.
I can hear all your words. All the
sometimes
words.
My mind goes too fast, and sometimes it has weird random pauses, and I don't know why.
That's fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah, so this is Tom. How do you introduce yourself normally?
I don't know. Hello, I'm Tom. Sorry.
Sorry.
Would you like biscuits? can I introduce you to food? Come play this game. It depends on the context. It depends on, you know, who I'm trying to get something out of. So my name is Tom. You were saying in terms of from a kind of wargaming history perspective, I think you were asking before.
Yeah, absolutely. Please give us your origin story, as we like to call it, your hobby origin story.
Oh, very dull. So I started wargaming. I developed interest in gaming somewhere in possibly the late 90s, I think. And I went along to a games workshop because they had all these cool figures. Wow, look at the cool things and the colors and wow. And I walked in and it was very exciting. They had all the little toys and it was all very fun. And I was like, oh, can I have a go at playing a game? And they were like, yeah, sure. And I sat down to play a game. And all the people that I was playing games with turned out to be total wankers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, when do I start having fun? And the answer was, it seemed, never. So, still interested, however, in pushing toy soldiers around, I went along to a place called Sheffield Wargamers Club, which fortunately used to be just down the road from my house. So I went in there and I met a group of people who were playing games completely different to Games Workshop sort of stuff. They were playing games like Crossfire, a system called Mega Blitz, and also so like Tim, there's a guy called Tim Gower, Martin Rapier, John Armitage, and Nick Mitchell. Those were the dealers that got me in. They were the ones that just kind of showed me this world of wargaming that was kind of very make it up as you go along, but in a structured kind of way, or just make it up as you go along. Playing big games, like, you know, I played one of my fondest gaming memories is playing Battle of Kursk with something like 20-odd players that took the whole of Kursk, and it was so much fun, and I was nothing but a Soviet speed red smear upon the land in front of the steel drive of the Nazis. But just, yeah, I think what they just, it was, I don't quite know how to put it. They were just such a fun group of people. They are such a fun group of people to play games with, that they just, and like I said, they showed off this very different experience of wargaming that was, or miniature games, that was much more kind of, you know, I don't know, Blue Peter, if that make the reference makes anything, means anything to you, in terms of using Blue Peter. Okay, so it's a TV show in the UK where they kind of make things out of junk and cobble it together with bits of sticky back plastic and, you know, I'm going to take the contents of my recycle bin and boom, there's Tracy Island. And just a really joyful way of kind of taking apart games and kind of distilling it down and have very much accessible, you know, you don't need to spend hundreds of quid on loads of figures. You can rock up with some bits of card that have got, you know, Fusilier written on it and whack it on the table and start telling games.
That was my first Razorback, was just a piece of card.
Chef's kiss. Yep. Chef's kiss. Beautiful. Beautiful. I recently found my... However, I did recently find, which made me very happy, a cardboard gargant.
Ooh, yeah, classic.
Which, having recently got my copy of Chris McDowell's Mac, which I'm totally happy to shirt out with, beautiful rule set, go buy it now. No commission goes to me, but definitely worth going to. This makes me joyful. Rah!
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. So, just, yeah, games like that made me very happy.
Okay, so the club you were mentioning, you've been with them for quite a long time then.
No, so I was there for quite a long time until I went off to university, where the wargaming side dried up, but then I played a lot of roleplay games. Quite a bit of D&D 3.5, but it clunks. Oh, God, it's done so much math. It hurts my brain. I like the idea, but no rules, no maths, please. It hurts. But instead, there's a game called Horror Rules, which nobody seems to have heard of. But the idea is that you're like characters in a horror movie, and your mortality, you're gonna die.
Yeah, <that's
laughs> just right. You know, your character sheet starts. It has an A4 piece of paper on and two characters on it, with the expectation at least one of them will die a horrible, horrible death. And I think that just made for some really joyful... I have very fond memories of telling these stories with some friends of mine where they... What were they called? They had like kind of like a squad. I think it's something like the Canaries or something like that. The story being that they were just like catapulted to whichever land Tom made up on the fly. And they would go on this adventure and anywhere between some, none, but usually all of them would die, and in wonderfully gruesome ways. And sometimes, you know, I'm going to roll the dice and then, oh, an artillery shell has landed on your head and say, just roll a new character. So it was, that was good fun. So I did that at university during most of that. But then also lots of board games. Oh, lots just like... Because I have my student grant, and you know, what would you spend that on? Food? Bah! You know, no, games, lots of games, big games. And obviously, at universities, you can play all the games because you have all the time, because you know, where else should you be? So, I nearly failed my degree. Because I spent lots of time playing roleplay games and board games, and losing my life to Rome Total War. And just joyful times.
There was a lot of casualties back then, I remember that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just throw more into the meat grinder.
Yeah, yeah.
And then came back to university, then went off to university again for a different course. And again, just doing kind of much the same thing, some bit of online and stuff, but a bit of a desert time, gaming-wise. Sad face. But then since coming back to Sheffield, it's just been really positive. I've been able to reconnect with the degenerate Tim and that lot who got me into this damnable hobby, and are the reason why I'm currently surrounded by, you can only see some of it, believe me, it's many years worth of poor life choices and poor self-restraint surrounding me. Yeah, just be able to reconnect with people like that, and then properly finding on roleplay games and miniature games and other fun times. Oh my!
Perfect.
Is that sufficient?
That's a pretty good origin story right there. Yeah.
Okay.
What leads you today? I'm just gonna check in with the chat because we've been ignoring them. So mostly it's just the peanut gallery here. We got Noised, first one in, of course. Loyal fan Noised even skipped making his delicious Italian food to get pizza, which is probably still superior to everything we get.
Absolutely.
Delicious Italian pizza. And he also mentioned that my audio was just particularly bad for everyone in the beginning of the show. So it just was a connection issue at that point. Baron Hambutton is here, waiting to see if he gets banned for good this time.
I feel he should.
Yeah,
just for reasons.
It's always the debate. Whenever we see Hambutton's name, we think maybe this is the time. We're not sure. And he was eating his British pizza, which is probably nowhere near the quality of Italian pizza.
No, it'll be superior. It could be sprinkled with tea.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
tea and disappointment.
Yep.
That's our favorite flavored tea pizza.
Yeah. And we got Tom here, of course. Tom Kennish, Psychic Hazard, Other Tom, we will call him Tom. In this show.
He's Welsh Tom.
Oh, Welsh Tom. There we go. Mm. The Adventurer. He always makes those nice pictures. And yes, that's it. Everyone's wondering why Ivan has such short hair now and lack of beard.
Because I have just been off doing things with my long helmet on, and I had to shave my head so then I can go raiding.
Yeah, that's right.
I assume that's how Ivan's.
Ivan's very naturalized. He's very... You know, if you don't know what a Dane sounds like, I think you could be very easily fooled that he is just American.
That's much less funny, though.
It is. The Danes have the least funny accents, unless you're Scandinavian, and then they have the funniest accents.
They do.
Especially
to
the Swedes, who love to make fun of Danish accents.
I watched some really fun Scandinavian stand-up. That this guy was basically just taking the piss out of all I think he was Norwegian, and he was just taking the piss out of all the other Scandinavian countries, including Norway. And it was really fun, both to kind of hear the humour and hear the kind of the inter-Scandinavian piss-taking.
Yeah.
I appreciated it very much. And the fact that the whole thing was done in English, except for, Ivan is Australian, Tom.
Yeah.
Welsh Tom, French, for sure.
Mate.
For sure.
Yeah.
He is now. Yes. So there we go. But yeah, very good. I will find it and I will put it on Discord. The stand-up amused me.
Perfect. Nice. What were we going to talk about next? So we started off with the origin story. We got that done.
And Mighty Dalek was too.
Yeah. This is the part of the show, I think, that we will make a little separate clip on. So you can start off talking about FerretCon now. Why you started it up, or who else started it up with you. I imagine it wasn't just a one-man show. But yeah, we're going to find out exactly what happened and why you do it. Why are you continuing to do it?
Mainly just so I can take the piss out of the Americans. obviously. Just so the continued joy of taking the piss out of the North and Nordic Weasel fan.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. I have no other reason. Good. Thanks for everyone. Hope you enjoyed the evening. Bye.
Spite is a high motivation factor in Nordic Weasel games.
Pleases my little heart. Mm-hmm. Ham says there's noise. Phone noise.
Yeah, it's a bit of a internet connection for you kind of noise, which happens, unfortunately, sometimes. Typically to do with the wired connections. It's going to be okay. Nothing's ever perfect for our podcast, so you don't have to worry.
Talking of nothing's ever perfect, let me tell you about FerretCon. So the story of FerretCon is... I like organising gaming day. Get a great deal of satisfaction from just bringing people together and playing and telling stories together and playing games. I've run, prior to FerretCon, I've done things like a Tewkesbury game where all the different players were kind of, they went out and bought a little box of 1/72 scale figures and they painted them up and then they brought them on. Right, okay, you're going to be this household, you're going to be that household, you're going to be the other. They paint them up, bring them along. We fight the battle. Good times were had by. And I've also organized a gaming day for Two Fat Lardies. Again, the idea was, for a lot of these things, they come from someone saying, is that game in Sheffield? Or when's the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay game in the North? And people going, there isn't one. And I go, well, click, 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 click. There is now. And like I said, that's what happened with Steel Lard. That's what's happened with 231. That's what's happened with Harrowing in the North, which is the role play, the Wolfrup role play gaming day I run. And to an extent, that's what happened with FerretCon, if memory serves. When are there gaming days? There aren't any. Right, there are. And I think so that's kind of partly where they come from, partly because I think it's just fun to bring people together to play these games, despite the irony of many of them being solo also. So yeah, that's partly. Yeah. Next question. Give you questions.
Okay. And anyone who has a question in chat can definitely post it. Tom or Baron Hambutt asks, what's the current score? And I'm not sure.
It will. So what he means is the current score us and the North American threat. And well, and the rest of the world. So yes, the world. Come on, crack on, mate.
Yeah.
We are going into our 9th Ferreticon in November. 15th of November, Saturday. Sheffield, Crook Social Club, be there. If you start swimming now, then you'll probably hopefully get there on time.
Yeah,
crack on. so yeah, we're going into 9-0 or 9.5. Once a couple of the Americans had like a kind of 2-person ferret con day. We're being generous. 0.5. So 9.5. But I think so that was kind of a big part of what I wanted from the day. But the other thing as well that's also very important to me is some of the other things are, one, I want to promote indie rule sets. I think in part this stems from, like I said, the origin story of where my gaming, I came from a background of playing kind of mostly less well-known or non-commercial games. And I think it's very important to me, the idea of being able to showcase, to give indie designers, indie artists, indie people, just that platform in which to be able to show off their pride and joy. Because the amount of time and effort and passion that goes into these bits of work, it makes me sad that they're not as celebrated as they could or should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not just kind of exposure doesn't pay the bills. It's also be able to give their people money. Artists can't live on views or whatever the phrase is. And so in part this also stemmed from the idea of, one, being able to showcase Ivan's work, which I was having great fun, but also then for it to be a space in which both, you know, diehard Nordic Weasel people, the Nordic Weasel curious, other gamers who haven't heard of it but were interested or kind of just gonna be like, sure, whatever, and normal people could come and play and have a go at these games and realize that actually things like Games Workshop games are often terrible gateway games for this hobby.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of both, I see people advertising what basically sounds like a correspondence course on how to learn to play 40K.
Yeah.
You need a chuffing correspondence course, love. You need to go through and go through that rule set with a bloody leaf, chainsaw, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas, like I said, Ivan's games and many other, like Song of Blaze and Heroes by Ganesha Games, fabulous rule set, so accessible, cheap as doubly chips, and you can play it using whatever random bits of crap you find around the house.
Mm-hmm.
Again, one of the best gateway games out there. So it was an opportunity to give, in this case, Ivan, that platform whereby more people come in and be like, wow, we can play games with these toys and it's all really fun, and ooh, and then spend money, and then Ivan can, I don't know, buy himself another long ship or whatever it is he buys. Dragon boat.
Yeah.
And I think that has then bled through and expanded as Ferreticon has kind of grown in its own way to include things like support from and thus for smaller suppliers like Brigade Miniatures. Tony's been fabulous in terms of sending us, as a cheeky dealer, he sends us a selection of his miniatures. I hand them out. We then go back and then buy more.
Ooh, yeah.
Happy days. Mate, honestly, do you want to come? If you want free shit, come to Ferreticon, all right? We're you'll get some good stuff. And, so like Tony at Ferreticon, Stephen at Moonhopper Games, he's just started supporting us. And just, his generosity has just been really appreciated. and Paul from Patriot Custom Patriot Games, all three of them have just been really generous in terms of supporting us. And then by extension, it gives us that space in which to say, look, these other people exist. Their toys are really cool. Or if you have a thing, Paul can put your image on pretty much anything. You know, yeah, possibly not an elephant, but, you know, you'd have a go at most other things. And so another gaming day that I run is Harrowing in the North, which is a kind of dark fantasy themed role play day, because I was told that there was no warm and fancy role play day in the North. Oh gosh, just London, bloody London getting all the chuffing fun, bastards. And so it was so, but in that space, Woofrup is the headline act. But again, it becomes a space in which to showcase more indie games. So not only did we have things like Knave Second Edition, which is a very good rule set, but also I'd reached out to a couple of like indie designers who are, you know, really quite small in, you know, tiny little, you know, in the wolf, in the in the role play ocean by comparison. But for me, it was really nice to be able to say, I will give you money, and in return, can I print off a load of your print and play games and hand them out for free? And they were a bit, they were very excited, and so it was nice. So yeah, it was really nice to be able to then again just share that with people, to say, you know, look, these people exist, look at the passion that they put into these things, the time, the effort, you know, the art's really cool, and this one involves pirates. Yar. What's not to like? So yeah, those are kind of some of the main motivators of why I set up Ferricon and Harry and the North and whatever silly idea takes me now. But I think the other thing that I think it's very, the other thing I think it's also key to the fact that we're on our going into our ninth to 0.5, just to make that, you know, rub that salt in the wound, is that this, we would not be on this number, we would not be on our ninth were it not for the people who support, encourage, and kind of, yeah, support and encourage me to do these things. So there's kind of like a group of, you know, Ham, you've mentioned, Boris, Tom, Dex, and Sid, who's known as Owen. You know, if it genuinely, if it weren't for, you know, I can be the nutter going, I've got an idea, woo, and kind of get the ball rolling. But I need those lunatics behind me to kind of be like, yes, idiot, go. Go, idiot. Go do the thing, idiot. and idiot will go do the thing. And I just need, you know, and having those people that I can rely on, and like Twisted Moon for Harrowing, you know, were it not for those sorts of people who kind of, they're the backup, you know, I'm at the head of the bashing ram, about to bash my head into the door again and again, nine times. They're the ones kind of using me as the batting ram. This metaphor is really going places, but I hope you understand my, you understand what the hell I'm gibbering on about. And I think I, you know, were it not for them, these events wouldn't happen, because recently, for example, there's been all sorts of things going off in my personal life. And recently I was getting to put, I was a bit like, I don't think I have the brain space to do this anymore. And their response was something lines of, yes, you do, fool, crack on. Okay.
Just keep going. Yeah.
So back to the kind of battering ram metaphor we go.
We do have a couple of questions. One has come from Baron Hamlet, of course. Okay. But yeah, we're going to save his question, because we're going to kind of cover it in the...
I've run out of steam.
Yeah, we're going to...
I'm going to drink more orangello.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Stay hydrated. That's the most important thing.
It's so nice.
So, yeah, Baron Hambutt's question will be covered in a little bit, I think.
Hi, Ham. This is your fault.
Yeah. And then, except for his other question, which is very good. I'm going to put it on the screen right now. Any advice for anyone who might be thinking of starting a little IndieCon, what's the biggest lesson learned?
I think partly it depends on what sort of person you are. If you are the sort of person who likes to have everything organized, then that's what I tried to do that with Steel Lard, where I had everything organized. I was in kind of frequent correspondence with the hotel. We were running it in. I was there kind of, I'd got together a list of all, I had a spreadsheet with all the different games in, all the different players in, and they're carefully curated. What are your thoughts? What are your preferences? And we kind of, it felt like bloody wedding planning. And trying to then curate that, and what are you going to do if it all falls apart? And that's what I did for Steel Art, and that, just that, that, if that works for you, you crack on, love. You do you. But for me, that didn't work for me at all. That hurt my brain. Whereas Ferretcon and Harrowing in the North, so much easier. The normal process is a date is chosen. I have a good relationship with Morris from the Crook Social Club, who's been so accommodating to having these events on. Choose a date, tell people, and then voluntold some folk that they want to run a game. You do, don't you? Want to run a game, don't you? Yes, yes. And, you know, after they've run it, they realise that they said yes, whether they thought they did or not. And so it becomes less of a kind of sit-down formal gaming event in the Steel Lard format, and much more kind of like a, what's the word? Like a rock-up-and-play kind of event.
Yeah.
And actually that suits me really well in terms of organising it. As long as I know that I've got a kind of a stable of games on offer that will accommodate a number of players that's more than two. Four plus is preferred. And then I personally always try and have a game that can just accommodate many. And so if you're going to organize it in that respect, then my suggestion would be to have the people who are kind enough to run a game, just let them do their thing. If they can stretch it a little bit, so much the better. But then for you to have a backup that you can accommodate any, like I said, in the past, they've usually been Starport Scum roleplay things from that I've run, and they've gone from anywhere between two players to 12 players. So, you know, and actually the 12-player game was hilarious, and all the characters were called Tom. And they're all bumblingly incompetent. I don't know what the players were trying to say, cheeky sods. So, one, find an event that's hopefully cheap and cheerful. Two, find stalwart, handsome, wonderful, wise people who will run games for.
And Ham, but.
And Ham. And Ham, you know. We let him in. He always runs the same game each year anyway. It's beautiful, you know. And then you've got those games, and then tell as many people as you are able through as many channels as you can. And if you have people who are good at that sort of stuff, get them to do it. And then I think the other thing that I have come to accepted, certainly for the first one, when I didn't know how many people, if any, there were going to be, I kind of mentally planned that I was going to run a solo game. I had this mental image of the first Ferretcon just being me, just in the pub on mid-side going, I'm going to move the little figures. Bang, bang. How much do they move? Oh, this much. Oh, bang, bang. Oh, I'm dead. Oh, not again. Oh, you're cheating, sod. But yeah, so I think those would be some of my suggestions. And the other thing as well is, if it starts feeling like hard work and like an actual job, if you're enjoying it, crack on, love. If you're not, find something else to do. Come play a game. Come run games at mine.
Yeah.
Ham.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't shout out Dex McHenry. So, hello, Dex.
Hello, Dex. Dex does amazing scenery. Like, just when you see some of his terrain that Dex makes, you're a bit like, I think I'm just going to put all my stuff in a bin. You know, he did this amazing Bug Hunt game with all the deserts, and he had his islands. I again didn't get to play it, but I was there going, "Oh, it's so lovely."
Yeah,
I think there might be photos of it on the Ferreticon website.
Nice, definitely. Yeah. People should check that out. It is in the link in the description. And of course, when you're there, you probably should just buy a ticket, even if you can't attend, right?
Or just rock up.
Yeah, yeah, just
that's what most of us do, including
take
me.
The flight over. I do have a question about travel.
Okay.
For you guys, what is the longest distance for one of your participants to travel, would you say? Like, who has to go the farthest?
The most regular furthest is Welsh Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I admire the fact that anyone who comes from stuff in Wales. I appreciate the fact that I think he is the furthest traveled. And I appreciate that, one, he travels all that far for my stupid day, gaming days. Two, he then willingly endures whatever crap I throw at him from chips under the name of fun. And three, once I turned him out, we were playing a game, and on the little, the challenge was he had to go outside and fetch me a leaf from the car park. And it was in like a Franco-Prussian war game. And he's been like, "What the hell's this?" And I was like, "Leaf, please." Stupid Tom with his stupid game and his stupid face and no stupid beard. Mutter, 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 chunter, chunter, chunter. Get a leaf. Mutter, mutter, mutter. Here's your sodding leaf. I laugh so much at her.
All right, so Tom says 3 hours drive. Would that sound about correct? Three hours.
Yeah, which in the UK is like traveling to bloody Narnia, mate. You know,
crazy.
I know if you're in North America, that's like, you know, popping to shop for some milk. But you know, you're pretty,
pretty much,
you know, it's like traveling around the world for us. You know, pretty much.
Let's say we had the con at Jason Ludanto's house in Arizona. For me, that would be 2.5 days drive. If I wanted to go visit Ivan, that's definitely 3.5 days.
You might as well just come to Ferreticon, mate. You might as well just come to Ferreticon. Like, just hop on a plane, bob over, you know, be right. You'll be, just come. Bring your camera, you know, interview everyone else.
It's not just thousands of kilometers. It's also going through the mountains takes forever. So there's mountains everywhere.
Jeez. How long would you say? 3 days to get to Ivan's house?
3.5 days, roughly, yeah. Depends on which route you go. Maybe I could do a little faster through the States. But from Canada, definitely got to be 3.5 days.
Oh,
and yeah, we went to Disneyland last year, and that was over 3.5 days to get down to Disneyland in California. Yeah. And I'm pretty close to the border. I'm like only a couple hours away from the border, like maybe 4 hours. So yeah, that's like the big hurdle for us.
How many you guys had?
Zero. Because no one lives close enough to each other.
I said, how many ferret cons have you had in Canada? Oh, zero. Oh, okay.
Yeah. If it ever did happen, though, what are the franchising opportunities for ferret? And does that come with support? Flyover?
Lucrative. Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I am quite happy to, if anyone does want to organize a ferret con, I'm quite happy to help in my own, you know, bumbling way. And yeah, I think there's just so many fun ways that you can watch it grow. And I think the, you know, in terms of we're going to have merchandise soon, because Paul from Patriot Games has got his big printers, and he's a bit like, oh, I could put them logos on any old things, you know.
Nice.
We have mugs for Harrowing in the North. We have mugs and coasters and dice mats. Oh,
nice.
I think it's about being able to have those friendly conversations with people. So as you put them together, then yeah, you can then see how they grow. That's quite fun.
Mm-hmm. Ruby. So I'm going to go into our big old questionnaire now, to get that really targeted, hard-hitting question and answer period going.
I need more alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. So the first topic is going to be on the events, mission, and audience. So the website describes FerretCon as a safe space for silly people to play silly games. Could you elaborate on this philosophy and what makes the event particularly welcoming for new or novice miniature gamers or older children?
Yes. Yes. As I said before, the key thing that one of the key things I wanted to do from this event is make it a place, a gateway place for people who are miniature games curious. It's me trying to communicate to someone who doesn't know what the hell this is, or whose preconception is lots of people with their great big rule books, and they've got to check all the particular rules. And that's kind of the voice my wife uses to mock anyone who plays miniature games, including her husband. And so it's trying to all that language is very much trying to break down this idea that, you know, miniature wargaming has to be rules heavy, expensive, clunky, and just a ball ache to get into. And so both in terms of the language in there and then the actual day itself, the vibe is hopefully, just people who are going to be smiley and friendly with each other, which as far as I'm aware, there's always lots of food because food. You won't find a gaming day, you'll be as well fed as other than Vericon. And so again, that way, and also just that kind of no pressure idea, hopefully it's conveyed. You can tell me as an external reader. Hopefully people will be able to read that language, be able to see the pictures, be able to see the food. It will hopefully convey that message of it is a space in which even normal people can come in and kind of give this thing a go. And, you know, if they like it, great, come back. If they don't, well, they've hopefully had a fairly, you know, fun experience of it and will at least have left with a smile on their face. I find I go to part of the reason I run these events, I laugh so much it hurts at all of them, which is currently cheaper than therapy. And I want other people to have that experience. I want other people to, hopefully they feel welcomed and they get to have a very silly giggle and they get to push toy soldiers around and play on Dex's beautiful terrain and play, you know, Ham's annual game, play whatever game Sid has been volunteered to run, and that they will, all of those will feel welcome. They'll feel welcome to all of those. They will hopefully be able to have fun at all of those and come away with silly stories with silly people. Because again, it's a very low pressure gaming day. You don't have to sign up and be there at this particular time. And, you know, you're locked into these decisions. You can just, some of the people who've come in the past, they just rock up at, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. With their kids, and we felt like, oh yeah, come on, yeah. Or, do you want to shoot your dad with lasers, or do you want to shoot your dad with bows? Oh, I want to stab with a sword. All right, love, you go play that game. Yeah, thank you. That sort of thing. So that's in answer to, hopefully that answers your question. That's where that ethos comes from. That's where that hopefully gaming day design comes from.
Okay, so you say then that kind of your open front to things really brings a lot of people in and keeps them there, sort of thing. So people will walk in, have their fun. Do they usually stick around, or are they usually just kind of like wandered off after the game?
The game itself. So we have one game in the morning, one game in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Nearly everyone stays for the whole day unless they've got, you know, family commitments or something like that. We had talked about having like a social afterwards, but I think particularly if you've got 3 hours to travel back to Wales or other desolate places like the Pennine, then, you know, I think most people then need to get home. So I think it's something that we have wanted to have, but it hasn't happened. But there's a lot of socialising that goes on throughout the day. A lot of, you know, the games last for varying amounts of time. Some are very kind of bam, 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 bam. So there's that talking, chatting points between throughout. You know, there's a decent time for lunch again, where we, you know, chat, and then all the games that do last longer again while you're waiting for, oh, you know, come on, Boris, I hope you take your sudden turn, mate. You know, while we're waiting for him, you know, how and I can talk about, you know, intellectual things as we
Oh, yes, yes.
Always.
Yeah, I think that covers it quite nicely.
Yay.
Ferret Con focuses on a curated experience of games from Nordic Weasel Games. Why did you choose to center the convention around this publisher's work? And what is it about these games that fits the fun and silly aim of the con?
Well, why this publisher?
It's good that he isn't here to listen to this, honestly.
Yeah, honestly. But
his head would grow so big.
Yeah, honestly. It's more a pity, you know. I put this down to charity work for him.
Yeah.
You know. I can't remember, but I think it was... Well, as I said, I think the reason why it started was probably because I said, is there a gaming day of Nordic Weasel stuff anywhere? And they said no, and I said, okay, well, there is now. Or words to that effect. And so why Nordic Weasel? Well, I think just because it was here. Because I was on the Discord where the conversations were happening. They seemed like a friendly group of people. They turned out to be a friendly group of people. And then also, I think, because Ivan's rule sets are... He's an indie publisher. Like I said earlier on, you know, that promoting indie designers to say, look at what these very creative, clever people can do, and Ivan as well. You know, I want to showcase them. I want to say, look at what these people can do. It's really cool. You should play their games. Mm-hmm. Give them money, because they need your money. And... So that was a big part of it. And I think also because, you know, he has such a stable of such a variety of games, variety of settings, you know, a variety of systems that there's, you know, there's something for everyone. And so, again, that's the other nice thing about it is that fun can then be had from all of them. So if you like this sort of system, if this is your bag, then you can play this system. And so in terms of the fun and the silly side, well, the silliness, as I said, comes from the atmosphere of the gaming day. It comes from how the people all interact, how there's always chatting and usually, you know, joking and piss taking, and, you know, but in a friendly way kind of going on, you know, there's just silly stories. And again, a lot of his rules seem to be lean towards creating those opportunities for that kind of the silliness or that kind of, you know, the fun of, oh, you know, I'm gonna throw all my men into battle because why not? And so I think that's those two things then worked quite well, because the fun and the silliness worked well with the rules, and it was the indie publisher. All worked well. Happy days.
And was it Starport Scum, the first one that you and the one that you usually run?
Yes. So Starport Scum is the game that I've traditionally run. I'll be honest, and this is going to be a revelation for nobody, it's mainly because it requires me to do no prep at all. and to have, at best, a tenuous grasp of the rules. I know. It's astonishment for anyone who knows me. But I have been known to forget rules from a one-page rule system. So that's the level I'm working on, mate. Yeah. I need all the help I can get.
I've been playing Mordheim since its inception. And I still do not know all the rules of that game.
I know. No, indeed.
I just forget.
Yeah. They just fall out my brain.
Yeah. I don't know where they go.
Yep. But the thing I like about Starport, that one, as a system, is that it's very flexible. It's very, it lends itself to, again, that kind of silly unfolding of the story. And I think the way I like to run roleplay games is, because I treat it as a roleplay game, is very much that kind of, particularly for those days where I don't know who I'm going to get, what their knowledge of gaming is, if any, you know, what they're comfortable with, anything like that. Then the thing I like about the system and then how I like to run games is to kind of, like I said, make it up as you go along, basically. and bounce off the players' ideas. So the story that we are, that's often told is, I had this great, you know, I did at one time, I'd written plot. I know, it's astonishing. And I sat down with my plot and my notes and I got it out and I was there, ooh, ooh, look at me, I'm all prepared for once in my life. And then one of the players said, I folded out, I found this GM screen for a completely different game. And I folded it out and then the one of them said, oh, are we going to that place? I hope we're not. And I went, you are now, fool. And what then followed was probably, again, one of the funniest things I've had, where all of the players were administrative workers in an office. and we had a thrilling chase scene in which they had two trolley trams that just went along at about this speed. And however, the way we were describing it, they were like leaping off with one step off, you know, using the kind of really kind of like, and they were jumping up. No, and then they were chasing these baddens, and they got to the baddens. They had to go on a ship to this. It's like a kind of, I don't know, tropical islandy kind of picture. Okay, yeah. that they'd got. I can't easily get it without standing up and showing you my butt, which I won't do. Public decency saying, I am wearing trousers. He quickly adds, I am wearing trousers. Let's see.
It is optional.
Didn't tell me that. anyway, so they got to the they're all chasing on this trolley tram that was traveling at this blistering speed of about this much. Oh my gosh, it was so exciting. How could we cope with this fun? And they got to the queue, they got to the boat, they're all gonna get on with the baddens, and they all then joined the queue. And they very slowly got on the boat one by one. While they're in the queue, they were giving the two the goodies and the baddies giving each other filthy looks and saying, you know, snide comments about the other person's filing system and how, you know, they'd stolen all the paper clips. and then they got to the South America, wherever it was, and then they, again, a different chase scene happened on a train, because I'd recently seen a Bollywood film. And then the culmination of this many hour hilarity of admin fun times was, instead of the dramatic fight at the end of the adventure, I got them all to fill out paperwork.
Oh yes.
So they if ever they wanted to hit someone, they had to fill out a form, or if they wanted to fire a weapon, they had to fill out, I don't, it was like kind of little bits of paper. I got like requisition forms for bullets and like health and safety forms, and just honestly, it was so funny because they're all the players. I, the undersigned, request 12 14 shells from, okay, there you go. And it was, and that's the thing I like about Starport Scum, is that you have the flexibility to then, yeah, stupid ideas
come from the players.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie, swapped dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
How different of a world would it have been if Modiphius had gone for Starport Scum and Ivan didn't stop him? What if Starport Scum was the big game?
I feel it should be. And I should get commission.
Oh, yeah. Cobb's work was vital.
No, I mean, yes, it was. All the wise insights that I never provide.
Okay.
Yeah, so Modiphius, if you're listening, Starport Scum, grab it. Grab it while it's cool.
That is the one, like, originally they came to Ivan for Starport Scum. Yeah.
Yes, Ham, I can, however, confirm to all listeners that Ferretcon is a trousers. It is a trousers.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but Ivan said Pi Parsecs is the better of the two.
Why Starport Scum and why they went for the other one?
Not sure why they decided on Starport Scum to begin with. I think it's because they're more of a role-playing community or company. And Starport Scum
fits that free flowing. Ham is right. Ferretcon is a trousers on event, sorry.
Yeah. So I will neither confirm nor deny that. just because of the procedural generation and the traction, 5 Parsecs it had up to that point anyway. I haven't felt it would be the better game to launch with. I think it was a good decision, honestly, but still.
That makes sense.
Starport Scum was the first game I ever bought from Nordic Weasel Games.
So, really?
It's a good one.
What fun systems and stories have you told with Starport Scum?
None. I never played it. I just bought it. It sat in the hard drive of shame. I bought a lot of things for it, and I read it. I'm like, okay. And then a friend's like, oh, you should try 5 Parsecs from Home. I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, this is the one. And that's the only one I ever played.
Yes. Having lots of games that you own and never play. Ha ha. Who would do such a thing? Ha ha. Ha ha. Ha ha. Don't look behind me. Don't look behind me. Don't look behind me.
Okay. So we're going to go on to the next round questions on logistics and future. The cost is quite reasonable at £10, with children free. How did the sponsorships from companies like Brigade Models, Patriot Games, and Moonhopper help you keep the event so accessible?
Funnily enough, not that long ago, Ferretcon was only a fiver. So the sponsors don't give us money towards the event. They tend to give me free stuff and a discount code. Or stuff that I can sell and then give them back, you know, money for costs.
Okay, things like, that. Like a commission.
Yeah, kind of thing. So, like, Patriot Games, they produced some very lovely merchandise stuff, and they get half of it to cover their costs, and we get half to then spend on all things. One of the biggest saving things that we have is that Morris at the social club has been very generous in terms of how much he charges us for the room and hire the room. And I think the decision was made to make it a tenner because then that kind of gives us a bit of a war chest with the idea that, you know, the money that comes out for the food, for example. But in terms of the food, so a lot of gaming days you go to will just have tea and biscuits, which is fine. But I think I wasn't satisfied with that because if you can't, quite a few people are diabetic, you can't then have biscuits, that rules them out. Quite a few people don't like sweet stuff, so you know, some people are trying to be healthy and make healthier choices. So I eat all the grapes. So I think my food budget is probably, you know, will be bigger than other people, other events.
Okay.
But if you come and see, you'll see there's a spread that kind of encompasses, you know, something, I hope, for everyone. Because I think as soon as you have food and tea and coffee and hot chocolate and decaf coffee and all that sort of stuff, food helps to break those relationships down. It gives you a kind of a good place you can chat. Some people have to be a bit mindful of their blood sugars and in terms of, you know, when they start, if they get hangry. So I don't think that's something that I would necessarily want to curb, because it's, again, it's that kind of feeling of making people feel welcomed. You know, like I said, if there's at least two people that I know of who are diabetic who come to Ferriccon, or one of the two events, or both. And I think it's a bit, what's the word, kind of like pushing them out a bit. You know, if that side of the event, they're a bit like, ah, this ain't for you, mate. I get it. It might just be something small. But I know in the past when I've been to these things, you just got these like small signs of saying you're not welcome. Then, I don't know, it just can leave a bad taste. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
And so, pun obviously intended. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, that's where things like the costs come, one of the big costs comes from, is things.
Okay.
And you talked about, like I said, in terms of the sponsors don't give us money for it, and I wouldn't expect them to, because mm-hmm. they're not big businesses. I wouldn't expect them to, you know, oh, hi, you know, Moonhopper, will you pay for our food budget? Well, no, because, you know, Stephen's been very generous in other ways. Or, hi, Tony, will you cover the cost of the venue? Well, Tony sends us, you know, a goodly box full of toys, and mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't ask anything for it other than for us to go and then spend money in his shop, which is, you know, fine. But you know, believe me, I quite happily will. That is not a problem. And so those costs, however, of the venue and the food and other things need to be met somewhere else. And like I said, it then gives us a little war chest that we can build up and maybe, you know, do something else fun with it, or do something stupid with it, or mm-hmm. maybe both.
Hopefully both.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Does that answer that question?
I think so, yeah. So, to summarize, the sponsors, would you say they are much of a draw then? Because they are giving you products and, you know, discounts for giving your guests. So have your guests come to expect that when they go there, they can get those cool miniatures and nice discounts. Would that, you say that was a draw? Or if it just is a kind of like a bonus, like, oh, I didn't realize I was going to get this cool stuff, but now I got it. So that's great.
I mean, I'm sure my more mercenary attendees, Ham, will, you know, come for the free things and stay for the continual play. I don't think so. I think for most people it's a pleasant surprise.
Okay.
And like I said, from my perspective, a big part of it is I like being able to, I'm incredibly appreciative that these companies will do these things, incredibly appreciative. And and I think the other side of that is that I'm very keen to show off these companies to other people, to say, look, Brigade exists and they do some freaking cool figures, you know. Like mm-hmm. some of their 6mm stuff is ace with bells on. Or like I said, you know, Paul Patriot will print anything, you know. So I think that's, for me, that's how I perceive that relationship between us and sponsors. For the attendees, I like the fact that I can give people cool things.
Okay.
You know, because I like cool free things.
Oh yes, absolutely.
So,
I mean, coming to a con and stuff, getting free stuff is kind of beautiful. And then they also get a buffet. That's amazing. Pretty darn.
Yeah.
Amazing.
If you go away hungry from Ferriccon, yeah. You tell me I'm doing it.
Okay. That's only £10, which so roughly works out to like $20 Canadian for us. And that's pretty darn cheap, honestly. Phenomenal pricing.
Mm. Thank you.
The next question will be, looking at the schedule of previous and upcoming events, Ferriccon seems to be a reoccurring event. What are your long-term goals for the con, and how do you plan to grow the community of attendees and game runners?
Ooh. I'm going to try and take those one at a time. Long-term goals. I think, to be honest, just keep having them. Yes. Because I like the fact that they exist. I like I said, for me, my only motivation is because I go to them. I laugh so much at parents. There's just such a friendly group of people whose company I really enjoy spending time with. And the fact it's only 3 times a year, part of me, I put it on a few more times, but, you know, to stop somewhere. So I think for Ferriccon, I think it's just maintenance. I think it's just keep going, okay. And hopefully the numbers will just keep growing. And should it get to a point where, so we take over like a bar area in the club. Okay. If we're filling that on a kind of semi-regular basis, then probably need to have a bit of a think in terms of what it will. I think in terms of attracting people, again, it's just trying to get the word out there that it exists, but also the nature of it, how it might be slightly different to other people's experiences of other perfectly fun gaming days,
mm-hmm.
But that it's aimed at people who are new to miniature games or want to just experience a different type of game, or like I said, and in terms of increasing the number of game runners as well, I am perhaps a little shameless.
Oh yeah,
in volunteering people to run a game, perhaps. Maybe the accusation has been made. I think in terms of it's just when I find people who are willing to run a game, then I say, yes, lovely, good. How many people can you run it for? And then I hope then express enough, appreciation to them for their time. And, yeah, because we have had some very cool games run,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, I do very much. It's that thing of if they weren't running games at Harrowing in the North, if I couldn't rely on like Rod to run his various, madcap roleplay events, Woofrup events, twisted in terms of, his dead, he's always got a fabulous, both of them have got fabulous games that they run. If you don't have them, the whole thing falls apart. They can't all just play me running a game Star Port Scum for a whole day. Oh gosh. That way madness lies. I'm not sure who's, probably everyone's.
All day long. Wow, that'd be amazing.
See ya.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like, this is an AI-generated question, so it always kind of ups the ante in drama. But, sometimes there's no drama. You're just kind of running something fun, and there's no real need to be capitalistic about it and keep everything just growing every year, making more money every year. As long as it's something that maintains its momentum and people have fun with, there's absolutely no reason not to. Just keep on going.
I agree. I think it's less about, because this isn't like a business or a money-making venture or anything like that, it's just, like I said, for me, it's playing silly games with some silly people, and I genuinely really enjoy the company of everyone who comes along, and I really enjoy seeing the creativity that they come up with. I enjoy seeing, the terrain that they make. And all of them just make me laugh at them or with them. Sometimes mm-hmm. both. And yeah. So I think if that keeps running, then hopefully other people come to that and then they experience that as well. And then, yeah. To see how it goes from there. And like I said, it's that opportunity as well, as I said before, and I said again, to show off less well-known games, indie publishers, just one person and, one man in his small publisher's dog.
Mm-hmm. And the last question is probably the most important question for you.
Mm.
What is the process for someone who would like to volunteer to run a game at Ferriccon?
You fool. Would probably be to email me, send me a message on Discord. I accept most games. I don't think there's any that I haven't accepted. And if you tell me what you're going to run, or if you tell me you're interested, then what I'll do is I'll encourage you and mm-hmm. keep encouraging you. You've been like, really good. I'm really looking forward to your game, Boris, that you should finally run. Boris, who's come to pretty much every single Ferriccon and says you'll run a game. Boris. So, if people like Boris want to run or are going to run a game, then yes. And if you want to come, just rock up. If you can message me beforehand, that's helpful. But if you're just going to come as an attendee, just...
So typically you could be pretty accommodating for last-minute game runners.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And even things like knowing the rules is entirely optional. you know, sometimes you've got a vague idea what the hell's going on. Or say it with enough confidence. You know, I've managed to get by this long and no one knows that I don't often know the rules. It's a secret.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. No one's figured it out yet.
Hypothetical situation, though. What if someone did show up all sweaty, wanting to run a 40K, you know, game all day long at one of your tables? 10th edition. Is that what it is? I think that's the latest one. Not the fun edition. The 10th, like the latest one.
I think the key thing would be that they would feel well. I would try and reserve my thoughts to myself. Probably fail. But I think the key thing was that they would feel welcomed, and probably I would appreciate the fact that they had made the effort to come and run a game. I would appreciate that they had gone through that time and effort, and probably with kindness in my heart, say, come play this instead. Or why don't you use your really cool figures, because they are really cool figures. But with this rule set, that is fun. I mean,
yeah. Well, Baron Hambutt, of course, has a great suggestion.
Oh, yes. Oh, dear.
And I'd say we give them a Rogue Hammer and tell them to get on with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
The
flawless plan there, Ham. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, that could be a trap. You could trap them in and then make them play a different game.
Mate, that I love that.
This is our tournament package. It's like, well, these rules look a little different than I'm used to.
No, no. They're definitely from GW.
Yeah. Crack on. Yes. That's right.
Yeah. Yes. There we go. So that's answer to your final question. Did you say you had questions from the masses?
Not too much. We basically covered everything that came up, I believe. It's mostly just the peanut gallery being charming. I do like the idea of your food for people. It's not what we do here. Typically, like, there's an event called Dungeon Fest, which is a independent fest. It's usually Mordheim-based, but they play other games there, too. GW and non-GW. Black Magic Craft comes over, and he plays. He runs his game, too. Which I don't remember what it is. It's called off the top of my head. Idols of Torment. There we go. So, but usually you will invite food people to come. So we have food trucks and things like that. So they will show up and feed the people, and they pay the money for it. You know, it's not that kind of, it's very welcoming, I feel, with your perspective, making sure everyone's fed and socialized. And I think that's a really nice icebreaker.
Yeah, I think that's quite key for me. Like, people go off and get whatever they want for their lunch. But the, in terms of like snacks and such, that, because there's loads of different people who want different things. I think, like you said, that's quite important for me, that people are fed. Different tastes are catered for.
And Hambutt wants us to really talk about the Discord community and how it feeds into FerretCon.
In what way, Ham? What do you mean?
Is that where you find your victims?
Yes. Quite a few of them. I think for those who don't know, there is a very active Nordic Weasel Discord server, which is a very friendly place indeed, which has a zero dickhead tolerating policy, which then makes it a really nice place to be. And I think a lot of the people who have come to FerretCon, but not all, have come from there. And I think, again, that's quite a nice space to then talk about these things, joke about these things, remind the world that the UK is 9-0 nearly, if I haven't mentioned that. And yeah, I would. I've engaged with various different wargaming social media type thing platforms, and I think that the Nordic Measle one is by far and away one of the most welcoming and friendly. And I think also that what's nice is as well is if you want to praise, grumble, or slake Ivan's rules, he's right there. You can tag him.
That's right.
You're like, Ivan, your rules are great. Ivan, your rules are shit. There's everything in between. Neither would be able to take these things into consideration. And you can play an active part in designing the rules. And I think that's all quite fun, actually.
Yeah.
I know that's quite good fun. You know, Ivan's there going, I have a harebrained scheme. And everyone in the community goes, yes, do that. Whatever it is, do it now.
Or influence him into doing what you want him to do, like Weaseltax.
Absolutely. Take our money, you fool. Buy your dragon boots.
Yeah. I've joined some, like, Discord channels that were run by the author of the game, but you almost never see them.
Mm.
It's like, oh, that's kind of weird.
That is kind of weird. And I think other ones that are, you join, and most of the conversation, there is none, just tumbleweed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, without the author there, it's like that's the draw, really, about their stuff. And
yeah,
if you're just talking to each other, you can just do that anywhere, really. Just go on Facebook and do it if you want.
Wow.
Where you can really cut loose.
Steady on.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Does that answer your question, Ham, about the silence?
Yes.
Too busy. Jaffa cakes.
Yeah. Well, we haven't heard from Ivan yet. Even on Discord, I just checked. No message, so I'm not sure if he's going to be able to attend this episode in the long run, unfortunately. But I was glad to have you. It's always better than talking to myself.
I agree. I find I get very bored with myself after a while. Like, I can't play games with myself because I cheat.
That's right. Dirty.
Then I catch the bastard cheating, and then he denies it, and then we get into an argument.
So embarrassing. Yeah. Groovy. So I think, yeah, we'll wrap it up unless you got anything else to say, because I'm good. I apologize to Noise. I know I said this episode is going to be the episode we talked about WYSIWYG, but I guess we'll postpone it. And if you ever want to come on and chat again, you're more than welcome to.
It's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been an interesting experience. I apologize for rambling more so than normal, but you never stopped me, so that's what I'm talking
about. Yes. Yeah, I'm nothing really about myself, so... All right, perfect. All right, well, catch you later then. Bye.
Cool. Bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.